recursos tecnológicos, desarrollando formas de organización emanados de sus tradiciones y al mismo tiempo adaptadas al mundo moderno. Estos son avances extraordinariamente emocionantes y gente como ustedes están en medio de todo.
This conference is at the core of the development and revitalization and defense and protection of indigenous rights, and with it the rights of everyone. And I would take for granted that people in the world who have any concern for justice and freedom would be very pleased to join me in offering the warmest hopes and expectations for the success of the endeavors that you're involved in.
Esta conferencia está en el corazón del desarrollo y la revitalización, la defensa y la protección de los derechos indígenas y, por tanto, de los de todos. Yo daría por hecho que la gente en el mundo que tiene un interés por la justicia y la libertad se unirían con gusto a mi ofrenda de cálida esperanza y mis expectativas para el éxito de los trabajos que ustedes están realizando.
¿Cómo la ven? El maestro Chomsky felicitando profesores movilizados, indios movilizados en México y en Latinoamérica. Brincamos ahora a una entrevista que se le hizo al investigador Ángel Valderas Puga, un doctor en pedagogía, miembro de la Sociedad de Pedagogos Mexicanos. No nada más son investigadores, son los que proponen políticas a nivel de política de Estado o de política nacional. Y él nos hace una disección muy, muy pronta y muy exacta acerca de qué es la reforma, la llamada reforma educativa. Un segmento, porque no vamos a alcanzar a pasarlo. Todo adelante con la entrevista.
El sindicato de académicos de la Universidad Autónoma de Querétaro y el del Tecnológico de Querétaro, por unanimidad en asambleas generales, estamos apoyando con todo a los profesores de educación básica, porque sabemos perfectamente que si este esquema pasa en el nivel básico, después van al nivel superior. Ya hay la brecha, ya existe la brecha. Pero ¿qué sucede? Que en el nivel superior habemos muchos investigadores en educación, que somos expertos verdaderamente a nivel internacional y que sabemos perfectamente que la evaluación que se está haciendo es totalmente antipedagógica, es de muy mala leche, lo único que busca es reprobar a la gente, no hay retroalimentación, se están abriendo grandes negocios a universidades privadas patito, que por ejemplo están ofertando cursos a los profesores que para prepararlos al examen de admisión. Lo que no se entiende es cómo estas universidades privadas patito pueden capacitar a docentes cuando en los últimos 20 años han estado ausentes en la situación nacional. Los que hacemos investigación educativa, yo por ejemplo soy miembro de la Asociación Mexicana de Investigadores en el Uso de Tecnología en la Educación Matemática, nos conocemos todos, no somos muchos. La investigación educativa no es lucrativa, no es una investigación en el área industrial, no es una investigación en medicina, entonces somos pocos, nos conocemos todos, nos hemos visto en congresos, hay congresos sobre evaluación, congresos sobre formación docente, etcétera, y sobre todo los que nos hemos dedicado a capacitar docentes sabemos muy bien que esta forma de evaluar es pésima. Un examen estandarizado de opción múltiple es la peor manera de evaluar el conocimiento. La meca de la evaluación estandarizada de opción múltiple son los Estados Unidos. Y desde hace 10 años ha sido un fracaso en Estados Unidos. Si este esquema de evaluación fuera bueno, los Estados Unidos tendrían los mejores resultados en el examen PISA a nivel internacional, y no es así. Estados Unidos está por debajo de la media. Ya hay una rebelión de padres de familia, de estudiantes, de maestros y de autoridades educativas en Estados Unidos en contra de los exámenes estandarizados de opción múltiple. Un país retrasado culturalmente, con una clase política que depende permanentemente de los Estados Unidos, nos viene a ofrecer como panacea lo que en otros países ya se demostró que ha sido un rotundo fracaso. Y por lo tanto, los que hacemos investigación educativa nos oponemos, porque ya sabemos que eso no va a beneficiar absolutamente a nadie.
Bien, y bueno,
así llegamos al final de nuestra tercera edición. Tercera, la resistencia, esa capacidad humana ante el abuso histórico, ante la injusta carga del que tiene poder y lo ejerce por la fuerza. La resistencia colectiva, que es cíclica, nos parece, pero no para. Que crea modos de subsistir por siglos para sacudirse el abusivo del lomo en un momento.
Así es, y bueno, esta es la cultura de la resistencia que hermana comunidades a través de la solución de sus retos comunes, a través de la búsqueda y la aplicación de modos para vivir en paz y hermandad. Y bueno, así agradecemos a los radioescuchas que nos sintonizaron esta noche. Para la edición de hoy utilizamos audios de Songs Around the World, Enlaces México, Pecados y Milagros CD también, y varios otros que vamos a poner en nuestra postproducción.
Y nuestra rúbrica está a cargo del grupo Son de Madera con un cascabel grabado en vivo en la ciudad de Los Ángeles en octubre del 2007.
Agradecemos la colaboración y apoyo de nuestros compañeros y compañeras de la Asociación de Programadoras y Programadores en Español, a nuestro coordinador de piso, Fernando Velázquez, a nuestro técnico en controles, Federico García, y sobre todo a ustedes, nuestros radioescuchas. Queremos conocer sus opiniones.
Sí, síganos en Facebook, Así es Nuestra Cultura, KPFK 90.7, y sigan escuchando KPFK Radio Pacífica, a continuación, Contragolpe.
Y el próximo miércoles, en esta misma hora, sintonicen Senderos de Oaxaca.
Buenas noches, y hasta la próxima.
Si su carrito contamina, gasta mucho gas y ya no da más,
no lo pienses más. Dónalo a tu estación KPFK.
1-877-KPFK-AUTO. 1-877-KPFK-AUTO.
Contribuye al medio ambiente y hasta tu cartera te lo agradecerá.
Hola, yo soy Gonzalo Rubalcaba y están escuchando KPFK Los Ángeles 90.7 FM y 98.7 FM en Santa Bárbara. Muchas gracias.
KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles y 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara. Y a través del mundo en kpfk.org.
Whenever we're sailing the high seas in Santa Cruz,
we listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101. Arr!
Tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs, they simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic, I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking, why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with
mind. Sing me a court that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. This is, as I mentioned before, twice-weekly show, and we have a shorter version today. It's 2 hours, but that may be quite long enough, or maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. The call-in number here, in case you want to reach me, is 427-3772, 427-3772. That's if you're listening to the show either on the air or on the stream, and you've got some thoughts. I can also receive emails at rnorse3@hotmail.com, and I will try to keep an eye on that as well as an ear on the phone. And I'm opening all that stuff up right now. So let's see what we can do. So a couple things I have scheduled. I'm going to be playing you initially some interviews that have been kind of piling up over the last week. And as fate would have it, you're listening to an old show that another hardy and loyal broadcaster here on Free Radio has put on. You are tuned to Free Radio, as I think I probably said before in this recorded version, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Stay tuned. I will actually be with you as a live person very shortly, and until then, well, hang on.
Strictly highest of the highest, and that me a feature. All right then, circle arrange it to seal them and flank. All right yo, this a office and nobody arrest me for that one yo. Yo, because me no want no pain, no want no cow. I set a grade, so you got to promote. I'm in no want no cigarette in my lungs for chow. Don't make me talk, me no in on no joke. Real man, no solar, purpose drunk and in the car. Why you think me blazing up the chalice and the country fat? Drive so far, go country fat, me flow just like a dungeon fat. Blood, Mr. Farmer man, blood, Mr. Farmer man. Yeah. Who do stop it from me, swear me, read me profit. Them a traffic, cut it, lock it, want to stop me in a traffic. Why you treat the trees so crabby? It's not like we are lobby. Father grow it naturally if we go have it. Give me little of the grapes and pass me a Rizla. All right then. Strictly highest of the highest, and not that me a feature. All right then. Circle arrange it to seal them and flank. All right yo. Mr. Officer, nobody arrest me for that one, yo. Yo, no cars, me no want no cane, no want no cow. I set a grade, so you got to promote. I'm in no want no cigarette, and I'm in lungs for chow. Don't make me talk, me no in on a joke. Them a grades are where me bunny make me high. Me knowledge and me wisdom increase and multiply. He give me vision to me third eye. He circulate to me body, cure new moon, and then it hurts eye. Me never give it up, me never let it go. The best from the west, me no matter about the south. No, no matter how them chop it out. Another crap I grow, we are gonna reap without a doubt. Give me little of the grapes and pass me a Rizla. All right then.
Hang in there. I'll be with you in a moment. Don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mere into miracle. Or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the chaotic show where we put it together as we go. And as mentioned before, it's 427-3772 if you want to call in. Area code 831-427-3772. On the agenda for today is kind of a review of a lot of interviews. I should say a play of a lot of interviews. I wouldn't say replay because we haven't played them. But and I don't know if we're going to get to a look at the city council or the city council candidates or the city council clowndidates. I'm not sure how we'd describe the people running for the Santa Cruz City Council as individuals. Many of them are activists, actually, and I want to commend them for their work there, although I've often been critical of some who've sort of gotten to positions of directorships and don't seem to be doing much directing. But when people run for city council, I think they help to create a kind of an illusion that there can be meaningful changes at the city council level without really fundamental changes in actions by the community and changes in the real structure of government. I don't have a fully formed whoop-de-doo package for you, but I do have some observations over the years, which I've made and I'll continue to make. But in any case, I'll probably be giving some commentary on at least one of the forums that city council candidates were at. That was the one that I got to was at the Loudoun Nelson Center, and it had, I think, 9 or 10 of the candidates, and a big overflow crowd, more than I've ever seen at any city council forum that I remember, although I don't go to all of them. I've gone to many of them over the years. So, and I recorded it, and so at least most of it, and so I can play snatches of it that have to do with police review and so forth, and hopefully we'll do that. So, what else have I got here? Well, I'm going to be interviewing Peter Marin, who's an activist, writer, and poet from Santa Barbara, who's been doing a lot of work defending homeless civil rights for decades down in Santa Barbara. They have a similar problem to ours in terms of the attacks on people whose homes are their RVs or their vehicles, particularly their RVs. Here in Santa Cruz, of course, it's actually a criminal offense to sleep in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, which is pretty weird. I was going to say pretty ridiculous, pretty weird. I couldn't think of my wish to say pretty weirdiculous, perhaps. But he and other activists down there, such as Nefsed Nancy McCready, as I call her, who has been a longtime homeless activist until recently. Actually, I think she got into housing a decade or two ago, but she, for several decades, was out of housing and was on the battlefronts all the time, and she's still very concerned about these issues. They're attempting to kind of join up forces with people in Venice and in Santa Cruz, what little forces we have, to challenge the RV bans that essentially, I gotta say, bigoted city councils are trying to put into place to protect moneyed interests of folks who have fancy houses in the coastal zone and others who are blaming homeless people for non-existent crime waves or petty thefts that are happening as the economic situation grows worse. So that'll be coming up on Sunday. Peter Marin will be hopefully calling in from Santa Barbara. I'll be going over an interesting debate between Tony Chiappi and another activist up there who have different views on the proposed safe parking zone, which is a program that Santa Barbara put into effect and that activist and city council candidate Steve Plaich has called for, which has gotten some mixed reviews among at least some homeless up in Palo Alto looking at similar proposals. And that's something else I'll try to put together. But let's begin with some voices from the street. Although, you know, your voices are out there, and if you want to call in, 427-3772, with things that have happened to you out there, breaking news, cranky opinions, I mean, you name it, you can. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And I guess I'm going to begin when this machine warms up, there we go, with kind of where we left off on Sunday. And that was, I think we were listening to some stuff from the Red Church, which, let me double check that here with my notes. Well, I think we even got further than the Red Church, or maybe we didn't get as far as the Red Church. Yeah, okay, let's see here. This is Pacific Avenue Interviews, I believe, and I usually cover a variety of topics here, mostly focusing on how the police are treating vendors and just ordinary folks who are not the wealthiest in the world, who are just trying to use the public space without bothering anybody else, except perhaps those who feel that the public space should only be used in certain very restricted ways, such as the city council has dictated with its network of anti-homeless laws that make it illegal to sit down on 99% of the sidewalk and illegal to vend on, oh, let's be generous, 97%. I did say it was an even smaller area to vend, but I've got to go through and measure each of those blue boxes with discs to find out exactly how much space is left compared to the entire space along Pacific Avenue. Again, much of which is simply verboten, even though there's broad spaces no one is using that it would be perfectly fine to be on, and traditionally has been, but the city council, through the staff, the police department, and certain right-wing residential organizations, not to mention the Downtown Business Association, have pushed to limit the clutter, as they call street culture.
Thank you.
All right. Listening to another guitar guy, Chris, kind tips into the case. Chris has been making lots of change, but only $1 bill. We have to change this situation. Let's listen to Chris.
The afternoon came, it was freezing rain. Just like exactly.
Chilly fog in here. Is it an original composition or just some sort of rip-off of someone else?
Oh, it's a classic Gordon Lightfoot, back at the end of his show.
Fair enough.
So, yeah.
Anything you've written recently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've written some weird stuff.
Something about the streets, perhaps?
Something about the streets.
About your own personal life and...
Oh, man, I'm an abstract writer.
Oh, really? Well...
I'll give you a song that's kind of classic.
Okay.
Okay, it's called Lullaby, but the beginning will throw you off. Ready?
Ready.
Oh, I'm out of tune. My bad. Sorry.
It doesn't sound that bad, man.
No, it was. There's a certain note
you
that...
You heard the last guy.
I thought I was the last guy. Darn it. Now I know the truth. How you doing today?
Working it out.
What's your favorite topic of the day? If you had a coffee table, you sit around a bunch of books.
Boy, I don't know. I'm not a coffee table guy. You know, I kind of run around saying, had the police bother you today? And it's my big deal, so...
Okay, let's get back to the lullaby.
All right. We've been listening to the music of...
Chris Kinney.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, Chris Kind.
Kind Chris.
Yeah.
Background. So I'm talking with a man eating a bagel outside the Red Church. How do you want to be known, sir?
My name is Victory.
And Victory, you spent some time on Pacific Avenue.
It's true.
And what have you found there recently in the last couple weeks that you think bears mention?
A bunch of park rangers.
And what about those rangers have you noticed?
They're big.
White outfits.
They're big guys.
Now, you yourself haven't gotten any citations.
Not recently.
And what do you attribute this to?
I cooperate with the police officers and I show everyone respect.
And...
You are still engaging in religious practices with various items on Pacific Avenue?
I'm an American, and I am pursuing life and happiness.
Uh-huh.
I'm engaged in the pursuit of life.
And are you doing so with a table and items upon it?
No comment.
Well, you can come down and look for yourself, folks. I'm keeping a weather eye on this guy. Anything unusual happened today that you want to mention?
No comment.
Okay. Anything you want to comment on?
No.
And again, we've been talking with?
Victory.
Thank you, Victory. Talking with?
The Dreamcatcher.
And, Senor Dreamcatcher, you've just had a brownie in your... It looks like you've had some hard times. I say at the Freedom Sleepers, you didn't look terribly happy when I crossed your path or passed your cross or whatever I did. And what's cooking? Anything of note?
Well, I whatever was in the air that was burned in the fires got to me. And it gave me one of the worst sinus things I've ever had. So for 8 days, I had a pounding eyeball bashing.
Oh, boy. Well, that can do it to you.
Right. When I can't sleep. When I got a headache, it's just incredibly intense. So I'm a real grump and a real grouch. I can't eat. I wish I could. I can't lay down. It doesn't do any good. It doesn't get up to do any good. But anyway, I had one of the most unforgettable nights of my life last night, and I want to thank a person named Gabriel and his assistant for doing what they did
Gabriel
for...
Gabriel the angel, perhaps?
It's possible. He's the number one living prodigy musically.
Oh, so the music helped to ease the sinus headache.
No, he was the first person that ever came up to me and told me, "You're playing a dulcimer, aren't you?" Before I informed them of what I was doing on the guitar.
He recognized the instrument.
No, he recognized the way I was playing it.
Oh.
I'm playing a guitar with three other guitars sitting there, but I'm not playing it like a guitar.
So he was a sort of a very savvy musical guy.
No, he turned out to be the real McCoy. He shows me where he came from last night in London. Where's the place where they make a star out of you in London? Okay, well, he's playing an acoustic guitar for Melissa Etheridge while she sings Papa Said, or, you know, that song, old blues song from the mountains. And she's singing it in the dialect of the mountains.
But in any case, you're over your headache. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, thank God. Yes, thank you.
How's the, forgive me for the endless repetition, but any ticketing happening?
No, but they sure have done a good job of cleaning up around here and getting rid of all the homeless debris piles that, you know, we have no right to contain. If we can't pick it all up and walk away with it, then we have no right to.
Unlike people who live in houses who have all kinds of shit.
We can't say it's ours and we'll be back later. That's just not appropriate anymore. If you're not, if you can't take it with you or put it in a trailer and ride off with a bike or with all your backpack in a trailer, that's appropriate, but not a shopping cart, not leaving it behind. You're going to come back later. That's just not happening anymore.
Well, you should tell that to all the people who live in houses. They could do the same thing and probably
yeah,
be
at least
much
they
more
have
useful.
Painted walls to contain their stuff, and they pay the utilities and bills for the right to do whatever they want. Who cares? They buy a bunch
Gotta
of stuff like
pay to play, that sort of thing.
Well, some people have so much money they don't know the difference after a while. Anyway, I've been really blessed lately, and I feel great at 57. And a guy came by and gave us free air mattresses. Now, a brand new air mattress, camping air mattress, about $200. And this guy brings my three. I want to thank him again, too.
All right. Will you be using that air mattress tomorrow night at the Freedom Sleep Out 60?
Yeah, I'll be using it tonight, too.
Well, keep me advised, and I'll probably see you tomorrow.
Yes, you will, bright and early. And my new guitar sounds really good, and after this guy played it and he handed it back to me, the tuning wasn't changed, but it did sound better, like just the way he played it. So he's showing me this video. I'm in tears. I'm going, where is this happening? He goes, that was last night in London, England. I go, you're kidding. That guy over there, and they both sat down and just kind of like gave me the nod. I'm just like, oh, my God. And my friend Scott is sitting there.
You, a lowly Santa Cruzan with an exalted Londoner.
I don't know who he was, but he was telling the truth. And I think it was someone comes up and goes, hey, you know, that was Neil Young's son that was with that guy that was playing your guitar. I go, no way.
This somebody just... tell him that was Dreamcatcher? Yeah, yeah.
I think they might have been looking for it, but like I said, it was the first person that's ever come up and told me, going, you're playing Dulcimer, aren't you? I go, yeah, that's cool.
A sweet sentence. And we've been talking with?
The Dreamcatcher. My real name is Michael, and his name is Gabriel.
I will call you Dulcimer Man henceforth.
Dulcifiddle.
Say it again?
Dulcifiddle.
Dulcifiddle?
Dulcifiddle. It's like a fiddle and a dulcimer. So
Dulcifiddle. I right. Got you. Thank you, Dulcifiddle, a.k.a. Dreamcatcher.
Resource alchemist, lore back in my gray, acupressure, technician, airbrush, graphic illustrator, all around, Karma Jedi.
Thank you, thank you. Any free report? Hello. Hey, man. How you doing, Ray? Hey, Sue.
So what came up on the agenda there?
So, Sue, give us the update. You say you're encouraging...
We've got real estate agents that are just predators, and they build these manufactured homes and charge $500,000 for them. They take the trailers out when there's nothing wrong with them. Even when there's beautiful double-pane windows and everything in the trailer, they buy it. They wait till the senior has totally lost their marbles. They buy it for $20,000 and sell it for $500,000.
So you're talking about
a manufactured home. Trailer parks. The only place you can afford to live in this damn county, and they're predatory real estate agents who are billionaires are fucking us up.
Now, is there
every time you turn around, they've stolen another one.
Susan, you were mentioning a particular place when we
Rodeo Mobile Estates.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, and they all like to get fancy schmancy, call them coaches and all this crap. The people that are in trailers are a tiny minority now and discriminated against by fucking rich people.
They use them for experiment.
Yeah, that's all we are. We're experiment. We're just...
That's where you live yourself.
Yeah, I live in a trailer park, and I'm treated like shit just because I don't have money.
And the latest example of shitty treatment was?
Well, it's Christine and Chuck Thorne. They are the main predators. And they are the ones that sold me a manufactured home, 350 square feet. That was it. You can imagine living in that tiny place. But I lived in it for 3 years trying to get the neighbor to stop meeting customers in our trailer park 6 days a week from dawn till whenever he felt like in the middle of the night.
Customers for?
Yeah, customers for his camera repair business, which would have been fine if the people that manage the park have made him meet his customers somewhere else other than our trailer park with no parking and no place for these people to park except jamming in his driveway, which was a couple of feet from my house. So I was never going to get... I'm sitting there right on my front porch with customers, many of them, I think... Well, not many of them, but at least some of them were pornography photographers. And my dogs would bark at them, and he'd call my dogs fucking dogs.
You're talking about these two lovable pooches here.
Things. And me, I'm a fucking whore because I've got dogs, and on, he's all this rude crap to his customers.
And I'm a trespasser at Bookshop Santa Cruz.
And I'm a trespasser just for going to the bathroom.
Oh, well, you got to watch your poo-poo these days.
I swear to God.
Just call the police because he can't use the word fuck in the state of California.
You think?
And that's Sue Wirth, who you can find often, well, at the Red Church anyway, if you check out their Monday meals. But she's also been involved with the Occupy movement, and she's a regular person around town. We've interviewed her where she got a ticket from Casey Coonerty for trespassing by trying to access the visitor's bathroom at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. The visitor's bathroom is... the Bookshop Santa Cruz has for decades allowed its bathroom to be used by the general public, although it's still technically a private bathroom. However, for the last decade or so, I'm not quite sure how long, they've had a visitor's bathroom sign posted outside, which means that it is available to anyone, whether they're a customer or not. And they can make it pretty difficult, the management of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, if they don't want you in there. Now, apparently Susan had a problem with her dogs and an unauthorized poop that happened. She wasn't willing to take care of it. That wasn't good enough. They didn't want her to use the bathroom. And they called the police on her and had her arrested and handcuffed, as I understand it. And she still was really upset about the citations she got. This story, of course, that you're listening to now is a different tale, and it's about her experiences in her trailer park, which I guess is outside of Santa Cruz, since there's only one, really only one low-income trailer park. There was a Clearview Court, and that it's still rent-controlled if you... You don't try to sell or move out of or bequeath your trailer to somebody else. That was gutted, the so-called rent control in perpetuity, which was passed by the city council in the 90s, was gutted soon after by the Rotkin-Matthews council. And there's only one trailer park now. I guess it's owned that has... I actually don't know how low the El Rio rents are, but it's owned by the tenants themselves, so I know people who live there, and they're not millionaires, so it's... I guess it's a more affordable situation than many around town. Let's hear some more of interviews at the Red Church on various topics. And again... 427-3772 is the call-in number. 427-3772.
You think?
We've been talking with...
We were not in the police district. We were in a sheriff's district. There wasn't a single woman sheriff. And they stopped... After he tried to kill my dogs a couple times, the only people that ever showed up were the animal control people to give him a little lecture about killing my dogs.
Killing dogs is inappropriate.
He tried to stamp their heads
bourgeois
out.
Bourgeois society.
He tried to stamp their brains out while they were tied up to the front porch. That man. And then he spread poison around a couple times after that.
And we've been talking with the survivor.
Susan Wirth.
Thank you, Susan.
I swear to God, it's just so wrong. And yesterday, what an experience in San Lorenzo Park
yesterday,
to wash their hands.
So what happened yesterday in San Lorenzo Park?
In San Lorenzo Park, a bunch of drunks converged on our county. I met people from Danville that had driven all the way to drink tequila in our San Lorenzo Park.
It was a festival or something?
A festival that they fenced off, charged $10 just for parking, another $10 for entrance to the park. And the only wash your hand facilities were inside that fenced area, so you had to pay at least $10 just to wash your hands.
Well, cleanliness is next to godliness.
I know. Well, but
expensive.
They don't care. They don't care. They're drunk and they could care less. And that's how I got in. I used the outhouse, and I wanted to wash my hands after. So I just marched in with my dogs and didn't pay.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
In the exit.
Trespasser again. You are notorious, Susan.
Yeah. You know, do you realize the men's room in the San Lorenzo Park has not had a sink in it for, I think it's about 3 months now?
Well, homeless people don't need sinks. They're going to get dirty anyway.
Well, we all get dirty anyway. But that's their excuse for using the women's restroom. There's a lot of them in the women's restroom.
Indeed. It makes for nice mixing. Thank you, Susan. Raymond, anything?
The trailer park being discussed here was built on
a carcinogenic car dump. Yeah.
No, it was a junkyard. And yeah, all kinds of stuff have been leaking out since.
Yeah. San Lorenzo Park?
Yeah.
And
no.
I'm totally surrounded
no.
by cancer.
Not San Lorenzo Park.
No.
The trailer park.
No. No.
Rodeo Mobile Estate.
I got you. I got you.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, that too.
Thank you.
Don't look this around.
Any street reports? Any reports from the street of any kind?
And that was a concern... 20 years ago around the Page Smith Community House, that the area there, that where now low-income people are in the programs in the Homeless Lack of Services Center complex, that the previous area was a large kind of, if not toxic, at least oil-soaked area from a garage that had been there and a cement plant next door. That was a concern of activist Dragonheart Daniel Hopkins, who opposed the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's attempt to, run off people who were camped there and build some kind of permanent, set up a, what we call the Trailers Not Trolls project, because they were running off homeless people that they, in essence, regarded as having the worth of trolls in terms of their need to be able to use an area to sleep and camp, which they had been able to do throughout the year before. And we're talking pretty ancient history, 20 years ago, 1995. And for a whole year, the area was kept fenced and vacant, and people weren't allowed to sleep there. In a sort of a familiar approach that the city and private property owners use to run off homeless people, it's being used, all over the state. You run folks off from one place, they go to another, and it just creates misery and artificial crime, where sleeping becomes a crime, and so-called trespassing, using a public space that's unused, becomes a crime, and taking a dump when the city refuses to put in public facilities or closes those that are there also becomes a crime.
So we're talking with...
There's fewer spots to get water.
Bob, actually. And I noticed, I heard that San Lorenzo got... What? You couldn't get in there yesterday because of a beer festival or something?
Yeah, a festival.
It's forum tonight, you know?
Excuse me.
I'm going to announce that.
I think it's... Is there a forum?
I'm not sure when it is.
So they're about to be in there.
They shut down the bathrooms early last week at Depot. Okay. Maintenance, you know. And what else? There's one other thing. Oh.
Announcement!
Sink. The sink was out at No. By the.
Okay.
What is it?
I think it's
by Oswald's.
Thank you.
I think it was at 7:30 or 7 at the Loudoun Center. So you get to hear the different people who are running for city council tell you why, hopefully, they care about people who need community services like homeless, etc. So go. You guys are citizens. Vote. City council forum at the Loudoun Center.
And that was Rabbi and social worker Phil Posner, also a one-time freedom sleeper Phil Posner, also daddy of Micah Posner, who's a council member, who regularly butters up bagels for folks on Monday at the Red Church, announcing on a Tuesday a week ago at the Loudoun Nelson Center, the forum that I mentioned previously on the show of city council candidates who are pushing their campaigns and being asked the questions. I think were a little better than usual, and the answers were a little more responsive than in past forums in earlier years that I've seen. And I'll try to get to that this evening before I drift away.
Another announcement. Announcement number two. Okay, well, this is an old story for all of you, but there's another Freedom Sleepout, number 60. That man's going to be there, I imagine. And that's happening tomorrow night. If you want, you can come there. There's almost always food and coffee there. Not the best, not this kind of food, but something to eat. No, it's not bad food. And it's about the sleeping ban, the right to sleep somewhere legally without being ticketed, harassed, or being afraid of being ticketed or harassed. The city council candidates really should... I would suggest everyone go and interrupt the entire forum and tell them to stop babbling at each other and start actually doing something, because the city council candidates, I'm afraid, have very little to offer. But you certainly should go and demand that they do something immediately. And I don't mean wait till they get elected, because most of them who are worth a damn are not going to get elected. That's the problem. And afterward, they don't do much because it's an election. So, anyway, that's it. I believe it's at 7 o'clock, you say, Phil?
Yeah. One of the people who is running for is Steve Pledge, who always gives us bagels.
So if you like your bagels, irrelevant as that is, Pledge is running. If you think he's done anything in the Homeless Legal Persons Project, about which there's mixed feelings, check him out. See what he says. He does listen when you can get his ear, and he's on a dozen different boards. So he'll be one of the people who is on that forum. Again, 7 o'clock, Loudon Nelson. Tomorrow, Freedom Sleepers are actually trying to change things by essentially setting up a safe sleeping zone as well, because people don't get ticketed on the sidewalk there, which is strange but true. It's not the law, but it's what the police do, at least have been doing. And finally, the next day, there's a meeting of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the group I work with. We talk about this some more. We give away free coffee, and we sit around and try to figure out what to do next. That's at the Sub Rosa next to the bike church, 11 o'clock Wednesday morning, if you're interested. Thank you.
Amen.
All right. No more A's.
I got a question here for you. So we're talking with
Philip Posner.
Yeah. And Phil, you say you met yesterday with an attorney who has hopes of doing some kind of free work for against the sleeping ban?
I sued against the city.
For what specific thing?
For criminalizing homeless people by not allowing them to have a place to sleep.
Part of our revolution. That's part of the program for the Our Revolution candidates.
The hidden Hillary Clinton campaign masquerading as Bernie Schwartz, that sort of thing.
Don't be so cynical.
Cynical? No. That's realistic. That's all.
And the Bernie Sanders campaign that has now sort of devolved into a support your local Hillary, but get together and act as though there's an independent alternative other than, let's say, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, who are also running on third and fourth party candidate tickets, or fourth and third party candidate tickets, whichever. There are slates of candidates running, a kind of two main slates. One is the group endorsed by a group called Our Revolution, which is sort of the residue of the Bernie for President campaign, although I think they're still going to probably vote for Hillary, although who knows, maybe not. Maybe they're who they're going to vote for really isn't the issue. What they're going to do locally is the issue, I think, since both Hillary and Trump are definite minuses in this situation, in my view. The campaign for people running locally, I think there's a slate voted by both, I think, the Labor Council and, I guess, a progressive organization, and also this group, Our Revolution, as they call themselves, that involves, I think Sandy Brown made it on one of those endorsements, not in the other two, or one, two, but not in the other one. And then three of them made it as part of the progressive slate. Steve Schnarr, Drew Glover, and the inevitable Chris Crone, who was a previous mayor who ran in city council, and about which I have many mixed reviews, and we'll probably be talking about him in the programs to come. The more right-wing establishment, likely to win, well-moneyed campaign, and probably endorsed by the Sentinel. I don't know if they've endorsed anybody yet. Is Mateen Watkins, J.M. Brown, Robert Singleton, and, of course, the inevitable and frightful Cynthia Matthews. She's not really frightful in the sense that she's really scary, but she's... And it's more than just saddening. There's a little of the aspect of horror to Cynthia because of her behavior, both as a private citizen and as a politician, in trying to sanitize the downtown and the city and creating various programs that have made it more and more difficult for poor people to survive, to sleep at night, to get shelter in their vehicle at night, to even park their vehicle at night. Anyway, that forum happened, and we're probably going to hear more about it, and actually directly from it, later in the show. If you were there, if you have any thoughts about any of these candidates that you want to call in and talk about, I hate to make that offer, but please do. You can do so at 427-3772, 427-3772. That's the call-in number here for Free Radio 101.3 FM, which is what you are actually listening to live as we speak. If you're listening on Thursday, the 8th of September.
So, is there a meeting? The attorney wants to get together with people?
No, not yet. We give them a bunch of documents to look at, including the Boise, this statement of interest from the
Thank you.
Department of Justice, and he'll get back to us. So right now, that's all I can basically say. But he's an impressive, seems like an impressive guy. He seems interested in the situation.
Is he a local?
No, he lives here, and his office is in San Jose.
We've been talking with Phil Posner, who...
This latest... there's an ongoing narrative that talks about a lawsuit against the sleeping ban, or at least to stop the sleeping ban, not so much necessarily to get restitution for damage done by the sleeping ban, which would be very interesting and very much to the point, I think. But it's about the endless attempt to get the law declared unconstitutional because it violates all kinds of things, most notably and most recently and most specifically in terms of federal concerns, federal government concerns, as expressed in a letter of interest in the Boise, Idaho case about a year ago, the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, that if there's no adequate shelter or housing in the area, mostly shelter we're talking about, good luck at renting housing, but also good luck at finding shelter, as all the programs become this spurious notion of a pathway to housing, which we've discussed on previous shows, and I've criticized Phil Kramer, executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, for. But as these things, as it becomes clear, there's no place to go at night, and people have to sleep somewhere, to arrest them and rouse them and ticket them and threaten them with tickets, for doing that is a form of a violation. It's cruel and unusual punishment because they have no other choices. So they're really in a status that you're punishing them for, not any kind of action. Sleeping is really, in a way, an involuntary action. You can control it to a certain extent. And Santa Cruz is sort of the legal authorities have used the pretext that, oh, well, you can sleep during the day. But obviously that's not a realistic alternative for poor people who are trying to work. Poor people who are homeless who are trying to get other things done that they need to do during the day. I mean, it's preposterous. And the fact that it's endured as a fiction at all throughout the last 25 or actually 45 years now, since 1978 when the sleeping ban became formally enrolled in the city law, is really outrageous and a tribute to the kind of studied brutality and callousness that middle-class society can show towards poor people. But, you know, if you look at history, that's nothing new. That's not surprising. And it has to do not so much with individual people who are cruel, but a social system of agreements and perceptions and privileges which people support, partially because they want to keep their privileges, partially because they don't want to earn the disapproval of their friends, partially because laws and force mechanisms have been set up to keep them in place, as were put in place to keep slavery in place. And so if anybody tells you that, oh, how can you criticize it? These are decent human beings. They wouldn't do that. They do that, and they do that in spite of the fact that they are, or at least have the potential, we have the potential to be decent human beings. But we have a pretty big fight ahead of us because we are in the middle of a social system that turns us into commodities, that turns us into things valued by our the amount of money that we are worth to a class that can purchase our work, us, our residences, everything else. And that's been true for, well, I think that's been true through literate history. You know, may not have been true in the early days of the hunting and gathering. Probably not. Tribes operated differently. But it's certainly been true in the last few hundred years, and I would say during the empires even that were pre-capitalist, speaking as a novice historian. I wouldn't even call myself a historian, but you know, a guy who's read some books. So, let's get back to... We're going to get to a little music in a moment, but... let's get back to what people in the Red Church were saying 2 weeks ago. And even though you weren't there, you can hear what they said.
Can be found occasionally on Pacific Avenue selling his book. Phil, the name of your book is...
Food for Thought, Character and Soul, Recipes and Blessings Included.
How's that for a mouthful? Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
Your wages down, putting you deeper in the hole. In the long race down to the bottom, on the fast track for control. They're marketing the water, getting profits from the sink. Privatizing basic needs they can't afford a drink. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Tearing the land apart, loading forests into trains, justifying long-term devastation with short-term gains. They're jacking medicine prices with the pharmacies stacked. They're patenting local plants and making people buy them back. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. They're making people servants, locking them in debt, stealing their resources with military threats. They'll buy and sell the whole world with the dollars they possess. By the time they finish profiting, there won't be nothing left. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. There ain't no end to this bloody chain of poverty and debt. Well, they call it free trade, I call it legal theft. Manifest destiny, the invisible fist of greed. Searching for open markets to plant the poison seed. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Subsidizing wealth with poverty.
And that was Ryan Harvey, Legal Theft. And I think the name of his group is Riot Folk. I've been playing a lot of that lately, at least the last few shows. If you like it, let me know. If you don't, let me know too. I'm looking at some of the clippings that I put aside but almost never read. I'm going to kind of run through a few of them now. This is from the Chronicle from a week ago. Second San Francisco police station gets body cameras. Now, this is being pushed in a lot of jurisdictions, including Santa Cruz County, City, Capitola and so forth, as a way of improving police behavior. And it could be, although I'm a big fan of individual citizens using their cameras and their cell phones to either document or deter police misconduct, because if the police know you're watching, they may be less inclined to be trigger happy or easy, you know, free with the truncheon, or even abusive in their arrest if they do so in a courteous, friendly, fascist manner. Not necessarily, of course, but I think that it can happen, and it has that potential. But police body cameras do have the some primary problems. They have to, the question of public accessibility to the video, and also officer accessibility. If the officers can change their stories based upon their video, or wait to give their reports until they've observed the video, then they can tailor their reports to give the best, put their behavior in the best possible light, instead of doing so in a fashion that is, if not more objective, at least lends itself to objective analysis more easily. And that is a problem in some cities. I'm not remembering right now specifically where, but some cities have made a deal that their police video will not be available to the public except in very limited circumstances, and the police will be able to view the video before writing their reports, which is, I think, just the wrong way to go. In San Francisco, apparently there are 250 cameras now in the field, or there were as of a week ago by this Chronicle Reporter's report. Officers there report using less force, and citizens complain less of brutality after cameras were introduced. Well, that sounds good. The goal is to roll out 1,800 cameras by mid-January. Taser International, yeah, the same one that produces the shock 'em if you want devices, is also putting out the cameras. Going to be clipped on the chests of officers, sergeants, and lieutenants. And there's some discussion in the article of how officers review them. Officers must double tap the device to activate it, but like a DVR, it is always recording, so it can catch the 30 seconds before the officer turns it on, only without audio. So it's always videoing, but to turn on the video, you have to tap it. The camera policy passed by the police commission in June in San Francisco set rules for when officers must activate their devices, especially for all public interactions except for strip searches and those involving sexual assault and child abuse victims and confidential informants. The captain of the Ingleside station, Joseph McFadden, says most of the video we get is from private citizens' cameras, but now you have officers with body cameras who will be able to tell you the real story. You see, again, this notion that police officers somehow have a monopoly on the truth, or their accounts are to be more to be believed than those of witnesses watching, even though it is their behavior that is often in question, is, of course, the going standard, unfortunately. Police agencies have been buying body cameras in the Bay Area for the last 6 years, but the push for the devices took off with the Black Lives Matter movement response to several high-profile police killings. And indeed, in San Francisco, they've gone through, they got the police chief fired after a third unarmed person in 9 months was shot dead by San Francisco police officers. Watchdogs see the cameras as a way to hold whole police accountable, and many police officers see this as a way to protect officers from unfounded accusations. Mayor Ed Lee of San Francisco, setting aside more than $3 million in the city budget to equip 1,800 officers. And, of course, the most contentious issue, as I mentioned before, according to this writer, too, was whether officers should be allowed to screen their footage before filing reports. In June, the police officers' union agreed to a policy that allows officers involved in shootings to view footage only after they provide an initial statement of facts, with a fuller statement coming later, but many activists are unhappy with the compromise, which was passed by the police commission. Wren, the Bayview station officer, has been wearing a body camera for about a month. Noted the device can create a barrier for plainclothes officers, with some people less comfortable approaching them or speaking to them. This story does not describe why activists are uncomfortable with this agreed-to policy of cops providing only an initial statement of facts instead of a fuller statement before viewing the video. I think it's important to have the officer honestly describe what she or he saw, not what they can do to match up with the video later. And that means the fuller the account, the better. This is a story. Second police officer, a police station gets body cameras, and it's in the September 2nd, 2016 Chronicle. What I really should be giving you, and I'm not, because I don't have that clipping handy, although there has been a little bit of coverage, is what the local police departments are doing, whether we're talking SCPD, Capitola, sheriffs, Watsonville, Bristol Arm, UCSC police, whatever. And if people have information about what's going on with those departments, please do call in, 427-3772. I would like to hear more, and hope that I will, though. Calls have been very scanty recently.
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full Timers on Facebook.
Julie, you have a dog in your lap, a bag in your hand, and a hat on your head, but you also have a report.
I do. I have some reports.
Tell me about your reports.
Okay, first thing, Highway 1, a tent camper was notified that as of the 1st of September, he's going to have to move. Habey was...
That's Lieutenant Joe Habey?
That's Joe Habey. Yes, he's been missing in action, but we found him this morning. And
that, I'm not sure why that bit of recording went scrunchy. Julie Shaw is an RV mom who's lived in her vehicle for some time and with her kids and her dogs. And she does a regular website called Santa Cruz Full Timers, which I recommend people look at. And she's been interested very much in the defending the rights of RV dwellers, vehicle dwellers generally, and homeless people generally. And what she's reporting is, again, the crackdown that is continually warned about, or increasingly warned about, in the county areas right outside the city along the coast. Maybe in other areas of the county, too, but I think... The areas I'm aware of are the Highway 1 areas. I actually drove back from the Bay Area yesterday. Actually, it was the day before yesterday. And noted very few RVs. It's like they've driven away the RVs, or the RVs have chosen to drive away from being there in the areas that they normally be. Scott Creek Bluff, Waddell Creek, even Davenport. There's some, and some vehicles. And I wasn't keeping a really close look. But the issue, as I've mentioned before on other shows, is that the county has passed an anti-RV law in March that flies in the face of what seems to be the Coastal Commission's inclination to not allow local jurisdictions like the counties and cities to criminalize vehicles in the coastal zones unless they have really adequate places for people to go, RV dwellers, for one thing, to park. And also to show that there's a real justification for it, such as, well, in Santa Cruz, various residents have claimed that there is a massive crime problem out of RVs, which was never documented at the Santa Cruz City Council meetings that I was at. And I don't think it was documented at the supervisors' meetings in March, but I wasn't there either. In fact, I just became aware of this law about 2 months ago, or a month and a half ago. After we won a temporary victory at the Coastal Commission stopping the city's law from banning RVs, in spite of the expectation that almost everybody, myself included, had that it would pass, go right through the Coastal Commission. The problem is, though, even though the Coastal Commission members made a lot of very strong and encouraging statements about the rights of people in their RVs and the importance of allowing everyone, and not just the rich or the well-to-do or those who can afford to be in hotels or live in homes along the coast or have friends who live in homes along the coast, to have public access even at night to the coast. Even though the Coastal Commission members seem to be stating agreeing with this, Coastal Commission generally has become more conservative and developer-oriented, according to activists in Southern California. There was a long kind of, quite a controversy in the papers about the retirement or forced retirement or firing of the president of the Coastal Commission, who apparently was much more sympathetic to environmental concerns. Now, environmental concerns have not always been sympathetic. Those who are concerned with those have not been necessarily concerned with homeless civil rights. In fact, that's the excuse that some very outspoken anti-homeless speakers, such as Pat Kittle, who I often jokingly call Cat Piddle at the Santa Cruz City Council, speaks, but more important, other or more distinguished environmentalists talk about how, you know, that we have to protect our environment from these homeless people. That's the refrain of those who are closing down the levee, that, you know, it's a, well, they're using the pseudo-public safety bullshit, if you'll forgive me for being so blatant in my sarcasm here and my hostility to what they're doing. You know, a shooting on the levee is enough to justify shutting down up and down the levee as though it's an endless crime scene that threatens the community. It's just ridiculous. It is true, you'll find a lot of people who are doing illegal things, but is it a situation where people are under threat? I guess it depends. I mean, if you're sleeping outside, you may be more threatened. But if you're a member of the community who's passing through there or visiting there, I haven't heard of lots of assaults of ordinary middle-class people in that area. There is an anti-homeless website called Santa Mierda, which means Saint Shit or Holy Shit, which is a really vitriolic anti-homeless website. Which you can, where some guy kind of regularly goes through and picks up from all the police reports every single violation he can find and denounces me, among other people, but a lot of those, he has a very kind of thorough Take Back Santa Cruz sort of perspective. It's been suggested to me this is some guy called Steve Schlick. I don't know if it is. I don't even know who Steve Schlick is, or the name is kind of familiar. But if Steve wants to call in and talk about issues on the air, and whether he does Santa Mierda or just has similar views, we'd be happy to have him on the air to debate and discuss kind of the basic issues that I think we need to actually get back to, which is basic human rights that are being ignored in order to pander to kind of a siege mentality of some homeowners and business people. So, returning to the Red Church again, a week and a half, almost a week and a half ago now. And don't ask me why this machine is acting up. I don't think it's the machine. I think it was some problem in the actual recording. Let's see what we got here. I think I can... Doesn't sound so good, does it?
So check those websites if you want to keep up with at least what you have learned about RV situations in Santa Cruz and other cities.
And beyond, yeah, it's unraveling fast.
Indeed.
with or without this questionable dog.
I know, quite questionable. That's Del Monte.
Hey, Del Monte.
Del Monte was in the dog pound for over a year, and nobody wanted him many years ago. So we fostered him, and so we came up with the money to buy him outright and get his title.
Have you heard about what happened to Xena?
I sent her an email to get a hold of Road Dogs Outreach on Facebook, and I asked for her or whoever to contact me back, and I have not heard anything back yet, but I'm willing to do what I can to help.
That's, of course, Roach, whose dog was dognapped by, I guess, officer, what's her name? A female police officer in the Santa Cruz Police Department. Gerlich, I think the name is. Could have that wrong. And claiming animal cruelty. She went to court and was disproved. Charges were dismissed, or else for inadequate evidence. And by that time, they had adopted out the animal, wanted to pay immense amounts of money, wouldn't tell her where it was.
Well, I'm so glad. I'm glad that the media is covering that issue, because that's something that needs to be addressed here in Santa Cruz.
You like them, huh?
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah. Well, apparently this officer is a kind of goes out and seeks out homeless dogs.
It doesn't surprise me.
At least that's what I was told.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
I haven't checked it out.
Well, I think that kudos to everybody who wants to bring light to this issue. Kudos to them.
And if anyone has information about Officer Gerlich or whatever officer, there's an officer who has been accused by several homeless people, a female officer, who's also apparently a DA. And people have two jobs. It's actually, I think there was a Officer Lennon was also a DA at one time, if I'm not mistaken. He's no longer with the force, I don't think, but a Santa Cruz Police Force. If anyone has information about who's doing this and accounts of this happening, I'd like to hear about it. If you're a little timid about coming on the air, and we aren't getting a rash of calls, as you may have noticed, you can call me off-air at 423-4833, 423-4833. I should also mention that with the least temporary victory of holding the RV haters at bay in the city, there has been a sort of on the right wing gossip line, there has been kind of a discussion that there are other means to go after RVs. And of course, there's traditional means, which is you have people like Lieutenant Habee walking around pounding on RVs at 4 in the morning saying, get out of here, and essentially directly intimidating people. It's kind of the Ku Klux Klan terrorism approach, using the mask of authority to do it. And then there's the what apparently may well be the approach. I got this from activist Bob LaMonica, who came to a Huff meeting recently. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we meet every Wednesday at 11 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Everyone's invited. Check it out. He advised me that he went to a sort of a meet-and-greet city council shindig where Police Chief Kevin Vogel spoke, and there were some questions and discussions of RVs, and while LaMonica is, far too sympathetic to RV, those who want to get rid of RVs and people who live in the neighborhoods and thinks we should really, you know, understand their point of view. And I think I do understand their point of view, and I don't like it. But, you know, he pointed out that apparently the police chief is saying they're going to use a very strict enforcement policies against RVs because the Coastal Commission has ruled they can't create a law against them. So they're going to pretend there's a law against them. He didn't put it in those terms, but they're going to use whatever existing codes. In other words, in essence, it's a call for bigots across the city to file reports, false or true, against RVs. And then the police will, they say, credit this stuff. And my response, suggested RV dwellers, is to document what's going on and to file counter complaints with the police about false police reports, which is a misdemeanor. A lot of the stuff that are the crimes against RVs, I don't know, expired tags. The one claim that has some merit, I think, has to do with dumping. That doesn't happen much, only 4 cases in a year. And that is one loud ringer, my goodness. But let's answer it. It's an actual phone call. Wow. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Ted.
Hey, Ted, welcome to Free Radio.
Oh, thank you. I hope we keep the reception here. How's it going down there?
It's good. Have you been able to hear the show?
No, I haven't. What is the radio number?
We're at 101.3 FM.
Wow. That's a good number.
Well, it works, although we're going to be losing our transmitter in about 2 weeks. Because,
why is that?
Yeah, we're losing our transmitter site. We need a new transmitter site. I should mention this to anybody listening. If you have know of anybody who's willing to have us move our transmitter onto the property that they are on, you know, which has a tall tree or maybe a building that's two stories and is anywhere on the west or east side of Santa Cruz, though not in the downtown area because that's kind of in a dip and a depression.
Right.
We would really love it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to go off the air. We'll be on the stream. You'll be able to catch us at freakradio.org, but not on 101.3, which is, are you listening to us on 101.3 or Freak Radio?
Okay.
Which are you listening to us on, Ted?
I'm not listening yet. I just wanted to call and talk about...
Okay. I got you.
I have to want to hear my voice, you know, and talking on the phone at the same time. But
that's okay.
If I can do that, I would. You know,
don't worry about it. No, it's good. I heard from your mom. She gave me a call earlier that you have been getting at least a one citation for having an RV. What is it? What's the nature of that ticket you got?
The nature of it is that I believe the ticket was illegal, and because they hadn't put those ugly signs up on the coast.
Well, what was the ticket for, Ted?
No overnight parking.
And
I got there at like 5 in the morning.
And
then there were other...
Where did you get the ticket?
Up at the dairy farm.
And that's what? That's near Davenport, or am I...
That's about 2 miles north of Davenport.
And
a mile south of Greyhound Rock.
And have you heard of anyone else getting tickets?
And then at the same time, no one else got a ticket but me.
And how many vehicles were there?
The RV was in front of me, and I know everybody was parked there. Terry and Jim and you know, a few other cars. Maybe I didn't know, but, you know.
Why do you think that happened? I mean, have you had any previous interactions with the sheriffs? I take it, was it the sheriffs who gave you the ticket?
Yeah, I have. I've had plenty.
Tell me about that.
It's not always pleasant because, like, let's say I get assaulted on the coast or somebody, threatens me with a big knife or something, you know, the sheriff doesn't want to help me.
And why do you think that is?
It's just a disservice, you know. It's discrimination, totally.
Why are they discriminating against you in particular? What is it? Are you a member of a particular minority? What's the deal?
No, I'm just you know, one of the RVers, you know, and I don't know. It's like,
well, what other incidents have you had with? You want to talk about it, if you want to talk about it.
Well, I wanted to just say that those signs up there on the coast are really ugly, and they're about every 25 feet.
Are these new signs, by the way?
Yes, brand new signs.
When did they come up, do you know?
Within a couple weeks ago.
Interestingly enough, that is exactly what I was talking about right before you called in. More or less, the county coastal RV ban, which they have been, they passed it in March, and now they're beginning to enforce it. But have you heard of it being enforced against anyone other than you?
Oh yeah, they used me to prime themselves up, you know, because everybody. I guess, according to the sheriff, they're giving a lot of tickets up there with the few people that are still trying to stay on the coast right now.
Do you know, actually, other than the sheriff, who I don't necessarily regard as an objective source, anybody who's actually told you they've gotten tickets?
No.
And
no,
are you,
the sheriff says they're giving tickets.
Are you in regular communication with other folks in RVs, or does that happen rarely?
Yeah. Well, that was the first ticket I got in my RV since I've had my RV for like 3 years.
Right, but are you regularly talking to other folks in RVs?
Oh, yeah.
And do you think they would have told you if they'd gotten tickets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes there's some, you know, people pulling trailers, you know, if they unhook them, you know, they get a warning ticket. I got plenty of warning tickets.
And warning tickets for this particular thing or warning tickets for 72 hours and move along?
No, not a 72-hour warning ticket, but a courtesy notice, no overnight parking.
And how many overnight courtesy notices, or how often, when did they start giving you these?
Well, yeah, like probably right around the time you were saying, right around last March, now up to, you know, about right now, I've gotten two courtesy notices and one ticket that, you know, surprisingly, you know, my mom was going to help me with the ticket because I don't have any money.
How much is the ticket?
Like $50.
I gotcha.
And then, so my mom and her friend were going to take care of the ticket for me. And they called down to Santa Ana, and they said they have no record of the ticket.
Have you contacted the sheriff's office and asked them?
I could have tried to call them today, and I forgot it's a message machine both times.
Say that again?
A message machine both times when I tried to call the sheriff's office.
You may have to go in and, you know, ask to see your booking sheet and say, look, I mean, it is true. They have if this is a sheriff's office and paying a ticket, you should be able to pay it off. I would think in Santa Cruz. I know, in some cases you can't. For example, if you get a ticket in the parking lot of the county building, you have to pay to some absurd faraway place. You can't.
Right, that's Santa Ana.
Yeah, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, Santa Ana. Yeah, and all the tickets I paid like in the last 5 or 10 years. In my other vehicle, I, you know, got all these tickets, and every one of them went to Santa Ana. You can't pay them here.
And
you only get 21 days to pay the ticket, not 30.
And have you had any problem paying those other tickets in terms of, you know, them disappearing or something?
No, I paid them all.
And so
But the thing is that those tickets are misdemeanors.
They're what?
Misdemeanors.
That's weird.
So I've never had a misdemeanor except for, you know, trying to, you know, survive. You know.
Well, you know, my suggestion is you send them a certified letter with the money in it. You know, go to the post office, send it to them, and, you know, then they have to accept it. And if they get it, they and you'll know if they're refusing it, then you have proof that you tried to pay. That's my suggestion.
Well, we had plenty of proof contacting, you know, over the phone, and they say they don't have the ticket.
Not good enough. You send them a copy of the ticket, you send them a money order, and you go into the post office and you make sure it's certified and return receipt requested. You ask them to fill out something indicating, you know, that it's a receipt that they've gotten it. You know,
they might be playing the shell game with me on this ticket.
But they can't really do it that easily if you send them that kind of a letter. So that's just my suggestion.
But they said they have no record of the ticket.
Right. Well, then they'll send you back the money, but you have proof that you tried to pay it.
Yeah, but if they don't have a record of it,
Anyway, that's my suggestion, and we can talk more about it later if you want. But I'm gonna roll on you with the rest of this show. I only got about 40 minutes left, and I've got to use every second of it. You know what I mean?
Okay. So the last thing is that ticket can go to $300, and then that ticket goes to DMV, so you can't register your RV without paying $300 plus the registration. So what they're doing is they're trying to, you know, get all the RVs out of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. But, call me later, you know, at the other number. And I will talk to you about it more. But, again, I'm going to make the same suggestion.
I got a lot of calls tonight.
I'll make the same suggestion to you when we talk then. But Yeah, we can talk again.
Okay.
You take care, man.
All right. Take care, bud.
You too. And let's assure you that the phone lines actually are open. If you want to call in, 427-3772. And also, I think we can get a little musical here, which will be nice. Let's see what we got.
Come gather round, people, and fall to your knees and bow to the red, white, and blue M16s. If you like the riot cops, you'll love the Marines. So be it all of your demonstrations to beat up your bodies and tear down your dreams, for the times, they are not a changing. Come, children and students, abide by our rules. We'll send in the troops to recruit at your schools, and we'll tell you it's noble, we'll tell you it's cool. You'll hear every word that we're saying, and there's room in the jails if the classrooms are full, for the times, they are not a changing. Come, mothers and fathers and friends of the slain, while we exploit your losses to fund our campaigns. We brought you the war, now there's no one to blame. You best hope the new leader ain't crazy. You can vote how you want, but the outcome's the same, for the times, they are not a changing. Come, senators, congressmen, don't fear a thing. They'll fall in the line behind the new king and accept with a smile what little you bring. They'll forget all the wars you're ranging. The bullets will pierce and the tasers will sting, for the times, they are not a changing. Come, presidents, dictators, take what you will. These people are yours to tax and to kill. If they ever rise up, there's walls you can build. The system is strong, you're maintaining. Just speak with a smile and lie with a skill, for the times, they are not a changing. The paths, they are plain, the choices are clear. If things are to change, friends, it's gotta start here. And if now ain't the time, I hope the time's near. Well, there's still something left that's worth saving. So stand up, fight back to hell with your fear, for the times, they are not a changing.
And I got to admit, that's the kind of song I like. That's another one by Ryan Harvey, The Times They Are Not a-Changin'. And, of course, you're still tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number here is 427-3772 if you'd like to call in. How are you being treated in your RV, if you have an RV, or in your vehicle, or outside? Freedom Sleep Out 61 just ended, and 62 is coming around the pike next Tuesday. I wrote about 61, well, I announced it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and got a little flack from Razor Ray, who's a rather regular critic of mine from the left, I would say. And he can catch his comments and I do a weekly sort of update right before the Freedom Sleep Out. Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, who is often there at the Freedom Sleep Out, at least during the initial stages, doesn't usually sleep there. Sometimes he does. And Abby Samuels, who was there last Tuesday, she's a sometime sleeper there, which is more than I can say for myself. You can read about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org, or just browse for Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you'll catch my occasional writings and some other stuff, a lot of other sort of more local things that some of them are quite interesting. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, or I should say, back at the church, what have I got here? Of this. Let's check this out. Talking with
James.
And James, you're enjoying a cigarette. God help you. And you're also bound for the Loudon Nelson Electoral Forum today.
Yes, that is correct.
But you say three issues that interest you.
Well, our city council candidate attended the hearing at the Coastal Commission's. They took up the issue of the RV ban on Westcliff Drive. And the
citywide, actually.
The city council member, I forget her name, I won't name her.
Rochelle Narayan.
That may be the young lady. Anyhow, she complained that the city was going to be overrun by homeless people. Then the second printing, it said campers. And then the third printing, it was homeless people again. So I'm wondering, she's probably concerned about homeless people camping in RVs.
Should we say bigoted around the issue of homeless people?
She's concerned with her property value, her view from her very expensive beachfront property overlooking Westcliff Drive.
Does she have such a property?
I'm sure she does. Or somebody,
I don't know.
Somebody she knows has one. Anyhow, I have a solution for her.
Yeah.
Why ban just one certain type of motor vehicle? Now, homeless people also like vans. Why not ban them as well?
That's coming up.
Well, and then campers or
let's take care of those two.
And anything bus-like, anything with a bus. It could be a church group. We don't know. They could be actually harboring homeless people amongst them.
It's a menace.
And my solution is, nobody can park on Westcliff Drive unless their Kelley Blue Book value is at least $70,000.
Well, what about citywide? Everybody's going to flood into the city then because they can't park there. So wait, she proposed doing it citywide. So that could be the solution.
Yeah, you can only have a parking spot if your Kelley Blue Book value is at least $70,000. And that would ensure a pure, homogenous society that her esteemed property value. And her
pretty white society, too.
Well, it might be a fairly affluent society, which is what I think they're getting going for.
I think you're right.
They don't like poor people.
Well, poor people can be so troublesome.
Well, they are. And you know why they're poor? They don't have a job.
Well, there are decent jobs, mopping up the floors and serving food. What's your problem? McDonald's has jobs.
Here's a recent Caltrans study from 10 years ago. There's 48,000 people a day that commute Highway 17 every day. Every single day. That doesn't include the buses or the 17 Express. That's 48,000 cars a day that go over Highway 17 and come back in the evening.
Sightseers, perhaps?
No, I'd say probably a third of the working population of this county works over in Santa Clara County.
Well, there is the yuppie infestation that has taken root here in Santa Cruz.
Well, it's also an evolution of the economic, of the reality of life, that we're going to have progress, we're going to have industrialization, we're going to have computerization, we're going to have mechanization of formerly mundane labor.
The wealth will get wealthier and the poor will just get fucked.
Well, not necessarily. The poor are going to get training and skills like I did over a 20-year period.
Are you working at the moment?
I'm 60 something, and I'm retired at this point.
You have a place to live indoors?
No, I don't. But I'm approaching my Social Security retirement age, and I'm going to enjoy that immensely once it happens. No, I went up to San Francisco for 6 months. I was applying for Twitter, Dolby Laboratories, Facebook, you name it. I applied. You know what they did? They looked at me. They were their little 30-something perky eyes and said, how long have you been doing this, mister? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm like double their age.
Age discrimination?
I wouldn't say it that,
why not?
That forcefully, but it was pretty blunt, pretty obvious.
Well, James, let's continue this conversation because, as you know, there are city council candidates waiting to hear your wisdom.
Here's another idea. They've got a railroad track that goes from, what, Half Moon Bay all the way to Washington?
Make it quick, I got to go.
Okay. You know, every data center I've ever worked at was built next to a railroad track. You know why? Because they trench it. They lay OC-192 48 gigabyte fiber along the trench, and then they pave over it with a bike path. You got a bike path, and you got fiber optic going from Half Moon Bay down to Watsonville. And every little whistle stop, Capitola.
And your point is?
Economic development. And we're going to bring in more business with just that simple.
We may have to run you for city council. Anyway,
I would be happy to, Robert.
I'll see you over there.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, I'll be over at the Loudon Nelson Center.
I'm on my way over as soon as I finish this delicious tobacco product.
All right, yes, yes.
Which is made in America.
Made in America. And,
America.
And you'll be laid in America as well.
Well, yeah, hopefully I'll get laid before I get buried.
Right on.
Good happen. You know?
And that was a jovial exchange with James before we both made it. I think he made it, though it was hard to tell. The room was packed, and I couldn't really get in. I did make some comments en route to the forum as I parked four blocks away. I'm going to play those now. And it's a bit of an update here. It's around 7. The Loudon Nelson candidate forum is probably starting. I've had to park and then move again because I noticed and was confirmed that Washington and Elm Streets, for a significant number of blocks, well, at least a few blocks, is now completely banned to all vehicles unless they have permits 24 hours a day. And this is something they tried to pull off around Fern, Limekiln, and Coral Streets a year ago. Indeed, they may have done so, but not posted signs. But they just apparently began this new permit parking crap ban on all non-permitted vehicles in April or May of 2016. I mean, it seems to me this is a clear privatization of public space all along the streets. And, of course, it was heralded by the permit parking law, which I associate in 2002, or 2003, actually, in her return to city council with Cynthia Matthews, who's again running for city council. And, it was, in the case that isn't clear, the only areas in the city, and there may be more, because I was told a year ago, or 6 months ago, I think it was about, actually it was more than a year ago, it was like, 15 months ago, when the city moved to put a 24-hour ban on all parking around the Homeless Lack of Services Center unless you have a permit. And you couldn't get a permit unless you were a resident there. Not of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, that didn't work, but a business resident. And I opposed this ban. When I inquired about it in more detail, the city told me this was the only place this was being done. Well, now apparently it's being done in other parts of the city where you are banned 24 hours a day from parking in some of these areas unless you have a permit, which you can't get unless you are a resident or a friend of a resident. Someone who you can get it, and you get a little temporary permit if you have connection with a person who lives there. And this attempt to monopolize parking along the sides of the street and make them only available for residents is clearly an incursion on the public space. People need to be able to park their vehicles. I'm an ambivalent fan of vehicles. I mean, I use one myself regularly, and I've resisted alternate transportation. And I think, however, that in theory and in practice, it's a good thing to do. Not that I do it, but to shut down areas along the street and reserve them for the private use of individuals whose homes are there, even though everybody pays taxes to keep the streets in good repair, is it's just another one of those takeovers, privatization grabs by private interests who want to deny the rest of the community, particularly the poorer community, access to those areas. It's a selfish approach. I began talking last week, I think it was on Sunday, about the Seattle proposal to stop the harassment of encampment sweeps that has been happening up in Seattle under Mayor Murray. And I began reading several articles. I played a right-wing commentator who's a big fan of the sweeps because he thinks, well, let's see if we can get rid of them. Come on, it can work. Let's give it a try. That's his sort of approach. And it's based, of course, on the fiction that there are services that people can be sent to that actually just don't exist. But his main purpose isn't getting rid of the visible homeless and the visible poor, because he doesn't like to see areas look like slums, and I can understand that. But if that's the only places people have to live, and you damn well let them live there, unless you can find something better for them. And it ain't happening yet. If it's ever gonna happen, and that's always a problematic issue, in spite of all these endless plans to end homelessness. In the meantime. And I've often proposed this in Santa Cruz. Homeless encampments need to be supported, as they were in Fresno for a period of time, where it was actually private authorities who went in and provided trash pickups and porta-potties and so forth for the people who were living under the bridges. And in Oakland, that's becoming an issue, too. It's a lot of, Obamavilles are showing up. I guess we'll call them Clintonvilles soon, or maybe Trumpvilles. I understand Trump is gaining on Clinton and even passing her in some polls, which I might kind of say in passing is because Trump, racist and bigoted as he is out front in his bigotry. And he's out front in his denunciations of existing people in power. Although you can never tell which way he's going to go. One day he says this, next day he says that. But that feels, and in a way is refreshing, when you consider the kind of endless hypocrisy and bullshitting that you get from a Democratic Party and Republicans alike. I mean, Trump, essentially swept past all the conventional Republican candidates. And people are tired of the bullshit, and that's why they'll pick up on the fascist alternatives unless they're given something real on the other side. And you might say Bernie Sanders was real, but he wasn't, because he said from the beginning he was going to be on Hillary Clinton's bandwagon if she won. And she was going to win, given the slanted situation in the Democratic process, the Democratic Party process. And he wasn't willing to take the gloves off and fight fully against that and then take a third party stance if necessary. He wouldn't do it, which everybody knew he wasn't going to do. He didn't really hide that. He said that was the case. So in Seattle, Mayor Murray is now facing a potential lawsuit, which has the right wingers all nervous because they don't want to be on the business end of a beating. They prefer to do the beating themselves. And this is an article in SLOG, which is the, I'm not sure what the acronym is for, but it's from a website called thestranger.com. And I read some of this article last time. I'll begin it again. Because what's interesting is the extensive defense that the ACLU and other organizations who are supporting proposed legislation. They're saying to avoid a lawsuit, you can pass these laws. If you pass these laws, we don't have to sue you and say that you're criminalizing homeless people. Instead, stop criminalizing them, and it'll be, we'll save everybody time and money. Obviously, a good idea, just like ending the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz would be a good idea. But as long as these dead-enders who run the city council and staff and run the police department, parks and rec, continue to do what they're doing, they're going to do it. I guess that's circular. Anyway, in Seattle, Mayor Ed Murray's administration is doubling down on its defense of the ongoing evictions of homeless encampments while still promising to find a more humane way to carry out the so-called sweeps. last night, and this story was written about a week ago, September 1st, at the same time as a new task force on homeless encampments was meeting, Murray's administration released a sharp condemnation of a new proposal to cut down on the number of instances in which the city is forcing homeless people to leave where they're sleeping outside. Murray found himself in a standoff last week with high-profile homeless advocates, including the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington and Columbia Legal Services, after those groups proposed legislation to reduce the number of encampment sweeps. That legislation would replace problematic city policies that currently govern encampment sweeps. Advocates said they had significant support for the idea on the Seattle City Council, but Murray snubbed them. He went ahead with a task force he convened to talk about how to improve the city's current policies, and then released a memo calling the ACLU-backed proposal too restrictive and expensive. Today, the ACLU and the Columbia Legal Center are firing back. ACLU of Washington Legislative Director Elizabeth Smith called the administration's response misleading and inaccurate, and CLS attorney Jurij Rudinsky says the city's arguments are red herrings. Quote, these are both hyperbolic and designed to stir opposition from people who actually haven't read the ordinance, Rudinsky says. That is to say, the ordinance that the ACLU and the CLS are proposing. Here are the primary claims made by Murray's administration and why the ACLU and CLS lawyers behind the proposed legislation say they're bullshit. One, the law would open the floodgates for camping on any public property. In a memo to the city council, heads of several city departments, including Parks Director Jesus Aguirre, Police Chief Kathleen O'Toole, and Seattle Transportation Director Scott Cubley, lay out an argument claiming the law would allow widespread camping throughout city-owned lands, including parks, schools, and sidewalks. The administration claims the proposal would require the city to repeal its current ban on camping in city parks, as well as rules preventing RVs from parking on city streets. That, the memo reads, would serve as an invitation to camp on city property and parks. The Murray administration also claims that the legislation would require the city to offer designated camping locations in city parks and could make the city vulnerable to lawsuits. Indeed, the legislation requires officials to direct people who are forced out of their encampments to other places where they can safely camp. But Rudensky from CLS says the law is not intended to allow for unfettered camping on public land. The legislation includes exceptions for unsafe and unsuitable locations, defined as places that pose imminent danger, like an encampment on a ledge over a freeway, or that prevent the intended public use of a space, like an encampment significantly blocking use of a sidewalk. In those cases, the city could clear the encampment with just 48 hours' notice because of the safety risk. If people can't get by or it's affecting the flow of traffic on that sidewalk and the public can't pass by, then it's an unsuitable location, Rudensky says. That was always the intent. The law would cost the city millions is another argument. The administration's memo estimates the cost of implementing the legislation could total tens of millions of dollars. The legislation would have some cost. It would require the city to offer encampments of more than five people, trash pickup, and sanitation services. Every dollar spent on supporting outdoor living is a dollar not spent moving someone into housing, the mayor's memo reads. The ACLU's Smith acknowledges the legislation will come with some costs, but says in a statement that the mayor's office has greatly inflated those costs. Plus, the city is already spending significant taxpayer dollars on the sweeps that are happening right now, Rudensky says, not to mention cleaning up all this shit. Today, much of the sweeps work is done by existing city and state staff, but the city also sometimes pays private companies to clear encampments. Those for-profit companies were used at least 12 times in the first 4 months of this year, and one company was paid $240 an hour. The city's current response is very expensive and entirely ineffective, Rudensky says. No one is happy with the current sweeps. While advocates complain they violate homeless people's rights, some neighborhood activists continue to complain the city isn't doing enough to clear encampments. Pointing unsheltered people toward a safe place to sleep and providing them trash pickup while outreach workers keep trying to find them housing and services will be cheaper than chasing them from place to place, Rudensky says. The goal of this ordinance is to recognize the realities of the existing crisis, he says. We have thousands and thousands of community members sleeping unsheltered every night. The truth of the matter, as stark and grim as it may be, is that number is likely to increase rather than decrease in the immediate future. Another claim by the mayor's office opposing this ACLU law, the law would prevent police from enforcing the law. Finally, the administration's memo claims the advocates' proposal would prevent Seattle police from clearing camps that are rife with crime. The memo says that if police identified tents with significant suspected criminal activity, officers wouldn't be able to do anything about those camps until they went through an onerous process to find the unsheltered people another place to sleep. Rudensky says that rhetoric designed to inflame and scare calls that rhetoric designed to inflame and scare the general public. The law, as written by the ACLU, CLS, and others, allows the city to respond appropriately to emergency situations such as fires, crimes, or medical crises as it normally would outside outdoor living spaces. There are no special exemptions afforded to people who are unsheltered from being subject to law enforcement, Rudensky says. He adds later, our goal is to make sure that people's civil rights and dignity are being treated equally and are being respected. Ultimately, the fight underscores the gulf between Murray's view, the mayor, and the advocates. The mayor believes sweeps can be improved, but are necessary for public safety. Advocates believe sweeps should be allowed in very limited circumstances, but are largely a waste of time and money. It also sets up the most significant showdown yet between Murray and the new Seattle City Council, which was elected in the new district-based system in November. Interesting. Councilmember Sally Bagshaw, who chairs the council's Human Services Committee, says she believes a majority of the council members support a slightly modified version clarifying responsibilities of the legislation. To figure out what that means, stay tuned for the council's return from its current recess on September 6th. There, the legislation will be formally introduced. A vote is expected in the month, later in the month. And that's the story. Mayor Murray, homeless advocates clash on proposal to curb encampment sweeps, and that's in the on the website the Stranger. Yeah, that's what it is. Let's hear a little music, and I'll try and give you a little update on that before I disappear into the distance.
They got cops on the streets, walking in lines with taser guns. Wooden batons are trying to keep you scared. The violent attacks, you know it all comes down to how you react. And now you're face to face, seeing it all. Disperse the warnings and making the call. They got busts to pack with people like you. When they did that in the 50s, the movement grew. Young student, new to the game. Movement elder, fanning the flames. Combat veteran, seen it before. Same tactics used in the foreign war. Final warning, you're keeping your ground. Committed people sitting all around. Through the bullhorn, it's all distorted. You can't leave now. You can't afford it. Hold the line. Even if your voice shakes, friend of mine. Even if your voice shakes, push forward. It's up to you. See it through. Silence breaks, voices loud, rubber bullets crack, pierce the crowd. Heart starts pumping, scared but proud because the people still sitting in the tear gas cloud. The line advances, the swinging sticks hear the marching boots and the taser clicks. Screaming erupts, someone got struck, people calling for a medic. They better hurry up, now the vomit comes like a flood. Getting choked by the gas, hands covered in blood. Bruised and beaten, limping away. Remember it's always been this way. They'll beat you down, show you the guns, get violent sometimes. And then change comes, organizing then come back to the too many people. But that's no tactic, gotta hold the line. Even if your voice shakes, friend of mine. Even if your voice shakes, push forward, it's up to you. See it through. Days like this, when something clicks, when you're confused, tired, and scared as shit. But your body's alive with that heartfelt drive, and you engage the problem right before you ride. When you could have ran, but you stayed fat. When you were beaten and gasping, you still came back. That feeling, a power that you got deep down. Rise to the top when you get beat down. There's a world to win when your heart is strong and it does new wrongs to focus on. Every day brings a vision to strive for, something to live and die for. When you go back home and you're on your own, it's easy to feel like you're all alone. But it's through memory and hope that we stay supported, because you can't quit now. Shakes, push forward, it's up to you. See it through.
And that was See It Through, Ryan Harvey, a video that goes with it. It's from January 28, 2012, Occupy Oakland's organized move-in day, when the Oakland activists reoccupied the Occupy Oakland encampments. Well, I checked in on the Seattle City Council. I think this may be a little bit of the debate they had, or at least the introducing of it. The story reads, ACLU homeless ordinance accepted by Seattle Council. The Seattle City Council moved on a homeless ordinance drafted by outside influences on Tuesday. That's what we need. Laws drafted by people outside the Santa Cruz City Council. Now, let's hope these big progressives who are babbling about, you know, changes at City Council come up with some legal proposals that would be real change. I'm thinking of you, Steve Plaich. You may not have been endorsed by any of these lefty groups, but I would endorse you if you came up with some laws that you wanted to see would actually be specifically urging changes at City Hall that need to be done. In fact, I'll offer to help you with that. Not that it's necessarily going to go anywhere, but it serves as a very important beacon, I think. Anyway, in Seattle, the council's action Tuesday was not an approval of the homeless ordinance, which was introduced by Councilmember Mike O'Brien and drafted by the ACLU and Columbia Legal Services. It is sponsored by Councilmembers Rob Johnson, Lisa Herbold, and Shasha Savant. The council voted in favor of taking in the proposed legislation and running it through its committees. It's now going to go to various council members. The ordinance creates a framework for how homeless encampments will be allowed or removed from city property. Critics argue the ordinance would allow camping on public land throughout the city, making homeless encampments legal. Others say it will strike a balance between compassion and the solution to the crisis. The main message from council members in favor of the ordinance was that the city needs a solid, codified approach to the controversial homeless encampments on various public properties throughout Seattle. They hope that this will start a discussion and result in a policy to guide officials on homeless encampments. But Councilmember Tim Burgess argues this is the wrong start. He was the only one to vote against considering the ACLU's ordinance. And, of course, they're giving him a lot of press. In August, Burgess authored an opinion column in Seattle Times calling for a new city response to homeless issues. I don't believe this ordinance is that better response, Burgess said. The proposed ordinance is not the balanced solution the people of Seattle deserve, an approach that carefully weighs compassion with our health and safety obligations. And blah, 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 blah. I'm going to skip this because I don't think I really want to bother with it. Councilmember Lisa Herbold said the city's approach to sweeping encampments isn't working and that people return to campsites afterwards. She said the bill is not perfect, but wants to make changes in order for it to pass. And there's more to this, and I'll be discussing it more on Sunday when I come back, and even playing some of the local back and forth from the Santa Cruz City Council candidates who are running, or at least walking in that direction. Also, I will be playing a flashback or two from yesteryear where activist beggarbacker Becky Johnson gave an eloquent denunciation of the don't chalk on the sidewalk political messages activities of the Santa Cruz Police Department. That's about it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside.
Yay!
I have fans everywhere. And coming up next on Free Radio, and interrupting me as usual, is Uncle Dennis Davey, who will be coming up, and you'll be hearing a lot of him in the next 3 hours. Plus, of course, Earth First updates.
Yeah.
And who knows what else. This man plays music. He talks. He growls. He grumbles. He does all kinds of things. I mean, he's worth listening to if you can deal with it. So am I, for that matter.
I don't know.
And I will be leaving you in his clutches. But he plays a lot of music, so that could be a one benefit. I'm going to begin a little, I'll leave the kind of segue into this, unless you've got something you want to put on, Dennis.
You're doing a segue?
I am. And we're going to do, we're going to play a little high-grade reggae to segue into your show. And again, call me off air if you've got some follow-ups. 423-4833 to anything you've heard, you want to be on the show, or you'd like to be on part of Free Radio. You can also
you have a transmitter site for us.